Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. We're so glad to have you with us here this evening on Ask Herbal Health Expert Susan Weed, a two-hour radio show each Tuesday night. Herbal medicine is people's medicine, simple, safe, effective. Please bring your curiosity and health questions. Susan will enlighten, surprise, and delight you. I know most of you know Susan Weed already. She's my mom, so I know her. But for those of you who have not yet met Susan, I'd like to share. She is the author of the Wise Woman Herbal series, wonderful books on women's health and herbal medicine, including Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Year, Breast Cancer, Breast Health! The Wise Woman Way, Healing Wise, The Wise Woman Herbal, New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way.
And Abundantly Well, Seven Medicines, The Wise Woman Way, the newest book in the Wise Woman Herbal series.
So exciting.
In addition to being the editor at Ash Tree Publishing and writing her books, Susan is the director of the Wise Woman Center in Woodstock, New York. The Wise Woman Center is open to the public on appointment-only basis. She offers weekend workshops, intensives, and apprenticeships throughout the season. Susan is also available to you online via wisewomanmentor.com. There you can go and view her weekly e-zine. You can subscribe to receive a notification via email each week, or you could join her mentorship program. Susan also offers distance learning correspondence courses and online courses.
TheWiseWomanSchool.com. Join us there for colorful, instructive, easy video courses, including Easy Herbal Medicine with Susan Weed, Happy Knees, a cancer diagnosis, adaptogens for long life, and Abundantly Well companion course, wisewomanschool.com.
You can also just go to her website, susanweed.com, where you will find thousands of pages online with recipes, articles, art features, and so much more. Well, for now, let's see what Susan has to share with us this evening. Thank you, and welcome, Susan.
Thank you, Justine, and welcome, Sarah Ellen.
Oh, thank you, Susan. How are you this evening?
I am well, and hey, welcome, everybody. Last week, we couldn't get in any more than you could. I don't know what was up with Blog Talk, but they weren't talking to anybody. So that's why there was no show. Technical difficulties. Thanks for hanging in there with us. And thanks for trying your best with Allie to get it going last week, Sarah.
Oh, for sure. I was disappointed that we couldn't get anybody on the Blog Talk side to recognize any signs of activity on our side. So technical
right?
difficulties. Yeah.
A little frustrating. But here we
yeah.
are. Hoorah! Hooray! Well, we have finally had a nice, good, hard frost, enough of a frost to make me say, all right, now I have to go dig up the rosemary.
Ah.
I mean, it will tolerate a little frost, but the one I left out last winter, just to see, was great and green and beautiful till about January, and then when we started getting really deep, deep cold, just gave up. So it certainly grows places where there's frost now and then, but not deep winter. So it's not, oh, something that has to be done before the frost. But when the ground is starting to get hard underfoot, time to bring those last things in and dig those roots.
Yep. Yep.
What have you been doing this week?
Oh, my goodness. This week, it has been, I'd say spontaneity has been the theme since last week, actually. And we decided last minute, instead of just retiling around things in our kitchen, that we'd just go ahead and move everything out and tile all the way through the kitchen. So it's been, yeah, a little upheaval here without a kitchen, but they finished the tile floor. So now it's a matter of putting things back together. Very exciting and a little bit overwhelming at the same time. And then we got hay delivered today, and we had the only goat that's going to have a date had a date today. So that was awkward, but hopefully there will be a pregnancy that results.
One is always hopeful.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Yes, she was playing as hard to get as she could until it was time for him to leave. And then it was like she couldn't, she cried all afternoon, like after he was on the way out.
People who have never had to try to play matchmaker to animals can hardly believe the shenanigans that one gets up to.
Oh, my, yes.
One of my favorite images is after having successfully bred our female, and I'm leading her back to the car, and the owner, who weighs over 300 pounds, he's like, you know, the size of a football player, is leading her back with another man, leading the buck back to the shed, and I'm just about to the truck and just about getting her in when the buck decides he has not had enough, and he takes off at a gallop, dragging these two men who are holding on to him face down through the mud.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, wow.
I'm thinking, wow, look at that. 500 pounds of man cannot stop that goat.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Our weather today, this was, like, way more adamant than usual when I was, like, you know, time for you to get in the stall for a little bit, buddy. He his strength was much more than what he normally displays. I'll say that.
Interesting, yeah. They are.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
They are bigger than us.
Mm-hmm.
One doesn't tend to think that because they're on all fours. But if you get down on all fours and then compare yourself to the goat, you'll see how much bigger the goat is.
So true. Goodness, to think
right?
of it that way, yeah. They are much, much bigger.
Much bigger. I realized this when we had given death 1 year with a group of apprentices to a baby buck, not a baby, he was probably 2.5 months old, a young buck. And we took the skin off, and one of the apprentices said, I want to wear it.
Mm.
And she got down on all fours, right, like she was a goat, and we put the skin on her. He was bigger than she was.
Wow.
This is like a 2.5-month-old goat, and I'm like, oh, they're really a lot bigger than us.
Our biggest goat, I'm just like really envisioning her right now. I feel like she's way bigger than me and like way bigger than my husband. Like, she's really big.
Yeah. We appreciate that. They don't stomp on us. And people say, why did you decide to get goats as a dairy animal? And I said, because you will survive having your foot stomped on by a goat, but you won't having stomped on by a cow.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it hurts enough with a goat. I would not want to try a cow.
What?
Right.
Right.
Yeah, so those are sharp.
So I did something today that really paid off a wonderful dividend. I decided to try out the New York Times No Need Bread recipe.
Ooh.
I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's a pretty famous bread recipe. And it's credited with getting, if not millions, certainly thousands of people to start baking their own bread. Because it is about as simple as bread could be. You mix together flour and salt. Add some water, flour, salt, and yeast. Add water. Mix it until it's mixed together. Let it sit for 4 hours. I was gone, so I let mine sit for 6 hours. Fold it over several times. Turn the oven on. Put a cast iron Dutch oven in the oven. Turn the oven to 450. Cover your dough, let it rise while the oven gets to 450, put it in your Dutch oven with the lid on for half an hour, then the lid off for 15 minutes. Voila, you have bread.
You know, I'm pretty sure I have made this recipe after my friend gave me starter, and I was just not so good at making bread the long way. And it is phenomenal. It is so delicious, right?
Right. And you think, oh, come on, No Need Bread. How good could it be? Fantastic. That's how good it is.
It's so good. And the folding over part is interesting. And one time I was doing it and decided in the process of folding that rather than just bake a loaf of bread, I was going to put stuff in the bread. Oh, that was so yummy. That was
so yummy. Oh, be still my heart.
Mm-hmm.
Ah.
Yeah, so that's yummy. Oh, how fun that you have a loaf of that ready. Oh, that's
well,
loaf,
and do you know what I got to eat with it? On the saucy beans. Thank you, Sarah Ellen.
Oh, yay!
I said to Michael, I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a big tablespoon full of these cooked beans, and I cooked them with some organic pork fat and a bunch of kombu seaweed. I said, I'm going to eat a tablespoon of these beans, and I'm going to enjoy every morsel. I put them on some brown rice. I said, and if I have to suffer and pay with horrible gas pains from it, I will at least have had this enjoyment.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm hoping not. I soaked them. I tossed the soaking water. I cooked them for like 3-4 hours. I mean, I really cooked them. As I said, lots of seaweed, animal fat. I'm really hoping that I'm going to be able to have this work for me. It's a long haul getting my body back into being willing to accept beans as food. So, thanks for the Anasazi beans. I love them.
Yeah.
And Michael said it was the best beans he'd ever eaten.
Oh.
I hope you got some for you, too.
You know, I didn't, but now I'm super curious. I think I might have to for the holidays. That sounds great.
They're the tastiest bean.
Mmm. Oh,
and especially
wow.
If you do, you know, add a little organic animal fat that you have around toward the end of the cooking time.
Okay, I'm inspired. We'll do that for sure. We'll add that to
sea beans.
Yeah.
And it was funny that I saw that, I think it was Kim, who put up my apple and pumpkin soup. Because I just made apple pumpkin baked oatmeal.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow. How did that turn out? Like almost like a brownie texture, like a
yes.
Dough?
Yeah, people are calling it cake. It's like oatmeal cake, but it's gluten free. There's no flour in it. It's oatmeal and egg and milk and a huge amount of maple syrup. But that's okay. Just a handful of stuff. Maple syrup's the only sweetener, and of course salt and baking powder and vanilla extract and 2 tablespoons of pumpkin pie spice.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, rather than buy pre-mixed spice, I just have some cloves and some allspice and some different kinds of cinnamon, a little nutmeg, and just, you know, get to mix and match yourself.
Right.
The spices of the season.
Oh, I can smell your kitchen. Mm, so delightful.
Ah, yes, indeed. Now, let's see. Where did you put the information? Ah, here we go. Okay. On Dr. Catherine King, who's going to be our guest this evening. She's passionate about teaching neuroscience-based practices targeting the brain and the nervous system. Wow. And she has personally found freedom from over a decade of debilitating chronic Lyme disease, chronic fatigue syndrome, mold toxicity, PTSD, and more by the stuff she's going to talk to us about. So stick with us until 9 o'clock East Coast time, or go do something else and come back and hear what Dr. Kathleen King has to share with us. Anything else you want to talk about?
Oh, no, thank you. That's mostly all we've had time to have going on here, so thank you.
Okay, then do we have anybody with any questions tonight?
Oh, we do. We have one listener that has already pressed 1 to let us know that they've got a question and would like to speak live. Everyone else, it is time now. If you have a question for Susan and want to speak live with her this evening, please press 1. We'll see your hand go up in the queue, and I will announce your area code when it is your turn for an open line. All right, it looks like we have 2 hands that are raised, and from the 603, you are live with Susan from the 603. You are live.
Hey, Susan.
Hi.
Hi, this is Rose from New Hampshire. It's been so long since I've spoken to you. I've managed to listen to as many of your podcasts on Tuesday night. But to tell you the truth, the reason I haven't called in, it's not because I didn't need you in your opinion, but I've just had 4 things going on the last year that I've had trouble dealing with, and I'm left with absolutely hardly any energy at all. There are 4 things, but the thing I wanted to ask you probably tonight first would be, is there anything you can recommend for burning needles and pins pain in the bottom of my feet?
That is a specific indication for hypericum perforatum.
Okay. I've only been taking, when I could, that's part of my other problem, because I have my severe scoliosis is worsened, and I have pain all day. So when I can get up and about, I have to get horizontal most of the day. I have only been managing to take 1 dropperful of hypericum perforatum after a meal, but that's probably not enough, huh?
I don't think so. For me, it's a remedy that I like to use very lavishly.
Oh.
So I certainly don't find it in any way. I don't want to say this. I've taken lots of Hypericum lying in bed.
Okay.
I'm not sure how being in bed sometimes somehow makes it that you can't take I don't understand that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't make myself clear. And you have to excuse me. Not being able to sleep was one of my problems, too. So I'm very foggy. I hardly, I got 1 hour of sleep last night. But it's just because I have virtually no energy. It's like, you know, all of a sudden.
When I'm laying in bed and the Hypericum is next to me, it does not take much energy to take it.
Okay, should that be taken with a little bit of water?
It's a good idea. Have a little water, especially if you're spending a lot of time in bed.
Yeah.
It's good to have some water by your bedside.
Right.
So that you don't have to use the energy to get up and get it. And so that you can take Hypericum frequently.
Okay.
If you have the extra energy to rub some Hypericum oil on your feet, that might work. And or if at some point you connect with some Hypericum oil that you could rub on the bottoms of your feet, that would be very helpful as well. I was very impressed this summer. I was someplace and somebody actually stepped on my foot. Big, heavy shoe, and I was barefoot. And I screamed, and I looked where I thought there would be some arnica, and there wasn't, but there was some Hypericum oil. And I put it on, and the pain in my toes went away in about 20 seconds.
Cool. Well, I do have some Hypericum oil that I will try rubbing on the feet. All the doctors, you know, all they say is, oh, it sounds like neuropathy. But, I'm not heavy. I've always been slender. I don't have diabetes. They don't really have any recommendation for me. And but it gets so bad some nights that I literally, just cry and try to shake my legs, try to stand up. It's just needles and pin burning so bad that, I try to kick. I mean, I can't lay still because it's so bad. I feel like it's going to make me crazy. It just gets so bad. But the Hypericum oil on the feet and taking the Hypericum tincture in water.
When I came home from the hospital, they sent me home with some pretty strong painkillers, which I threw in the trash. And I had really, really bad pain in my nerves from the surgery, and really bad pain in my feet and my legs and the nerves. And I took a dropper full of Hypericum tincture every 15 minutes, laying in bed for about 30 hours.
Okay.
I'm not suggesting you need to do that much, but I'm saying that's what I did because I did not want to continue to take the opioids. They had been feeding me in the hospital for 2 weeks, thank you.
Yes.
Because I was in excruciating pain, not just laying there crying, but screaming.
Yes. Yes.
So yep. I know that Hypericum tincture and Hypericum oil work. They do have to be used like herbs, which means, lavishly, not like drugs.
Yeah.
Which we take in small amounts, maybe once a day, and that's great for drugs.
Yeah.
But for herbs, we usually have to apply ourselves more. Now, I didn't have to continue to take it every 15 minutes. For after that 30 hours, I do continue to take some Hypericum. At this point, I take a dropper full once or twice a day. And there's still a fair amount of nerve pain from the surgery, which varies as nerves are continuing to wake up in my body, nerves that were damaged by the surgery that have come back. Often come back with oh, sometimes it'll feel like when the nerve comes back, it comes back, sometimes it feels like somebody's thrown boiling water at me.
Uh-huh. You never had the needles and pins sensation?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Certainly something I would call stabbing pain.
Uh-huh, yes. I do have some of that, too. And even, like, all of a sudden I'll get a jab in my toe. It's like, like a stab.
Yeah.
And it's just like...
Stab,
it comes,
right.
Yeah, a stab. Like suddenly it's there, and then in 1 second it's gone.
Like, if you wanted to believe that somebody had a doll of you and was sticking pins in it, you could.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a good trip. But the Hypericum really is a wonderful ally when you're experiencing that. Don't be afraid of using it and using it lavishly, especially to get yourself in a better place
I can picture myself putting the oil on the bottom of my feet, but
good.
I mean, I don't think I can apply that very often because it's oily and then
you don't
I want
need
to.
I didn't say anything about that, did I?
No, I'm sorry.
Like about the tincture.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm confused.
I talked about putting the oil on your feet. End of discussion.
Yes.
I talked about taking the tincture frequently.
Yes. Oh. So, yeah, because I can't put the oil on my feet more than once a night.
Right. Exactly.
Right. And I'd have to put a sock on so I don't get it, you know, all over everything.
I have a light coat of Hypericum oil that's put on to my indolent wound caused by the radiation, a wound I've had for 3.5 years now.
Yeah.
And I don't put anything over it. I don't soak it in oil. I just put a very light coat and it absorbs into the skin.
Okay. I will try that.
Now, if you want to do a whole treatment and do enough that you need to wear socks, I'm not against it.
Yes.
I'm just saying you don't have to do it.
Yes. Yes. So I have no idea where this burning pain has come from, neither. I'm just wondering if it could be a result of my worsened scoliosis because it got so bad this past year and a half that pain is all day long.
Let me ask you about your worsened scoliosis. You're still drinking nourishing herbal infusions?
Oh, of course, Susan. Thanks to you.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. And you're doing some kind of stretching or Tai Chi or Qigong or yoga, something like that?
Well, I used to go to physical therapy and I used to stretch and go, and I had to stop because I virtually had no energy. What I can manage to do now is only a little bit stretching in the morning when I first get up, because when I first get up, I don't, after rest, you know, being horizontal all night, but of course not sleeping much, I don't have the pain. And if I do get the pain, I stretch a little, but I'm just so fatigued, it's even hard to do that. But I push myself to do a little walking and a little stretching, but it's not much, you know, because it gets so bad even after a 10-minute walk or 15-minute walk, or when I brush my teeth to bend over, I can't cook anymore because if I stand, you know, I have to lie down again. What was I going to say? I'm sorry, I'm losing
because
my
of the pain of your scoliosis.
Yes. So what I managed, what all the doctor could recommend that I try is a different, I've gone to a sports medicine guy who was giving me injections into the, oh, gosh, no, because I haven't slept much. I can't think of the name of it, and I knew it before I called you. Trigger points, into the trigger points. He would try injecting something when he touches me all up and down my spine and into my butt where it was painful. He would do trigger point injections of something to numb it. And I'd go back in, 3 weeks or so, and he'd try it again. It worked a couple times, but then it didn't work at all. So then he passed me on to the alternative pain, spinal pain doctor, you know, one who doesn't believe in surgery, because that can't help me. If I could get a spinal transplant, that's about the only thing, because it's worse and so bad. But he, I had my first heavy dose of steroid injections. I finally gave in to that. For 2 years, I avoided it. And you can only get like three a year or something like that, because it's directly into the facet of the spine. And, of course, it's quite painful, but I'm willing to do it if it's going to help. But that hasn't helped much. So now I have to wait another 3 or 4 months before I can try it again. So I don't know if this, you know, foot pain is a result, you know, could be related. You know, I'm trying to get to the root of the problem, not just deal with the symptom, but I don't know. I don't know if you have any tips for me about that.
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by the root of the problem, because
well,
if we decide that the pain is from the scoliosis, as you say, there's not much can be done. So we may have gotten to the root, but then what exactly what good does that do us?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So it's why I'm not so interested in getting to the root of the problem, but very interested in dealing with what's happening right now and how we can make your physical being happier.
Yes, because I've been so active all my life.
Because you're very unhappy with what's going on.
Oh, it's hard
to
deal with.
That's the thing that's like that I'm hearing the most, is how unhappy you are about everything.
Well, it's hard to have joy when you're in pain all the time, you know. And
I absolutely do know whereof you speak. Having basically been in chronic pain for about 5.5 years now. And I know, you know, a huge number of different ways to be with that, to relieve that, to approach that. And none of them have ever prevented me from experiencing joy.
Well, I'm remaining optimistic, and I...
That sounds good, because joy is a choice.
Yes.
Even if we're in pain.
Yeah.
We can choose joy. Like I said to Sarah Ellen, I'm going to eat this tablespoon of anasazi beans, and I am going to really focus on the sense of eating it and tasting it and chewing it, and I'm going to enjoy it. And if I pay with hours or days of suffering because my gut is unhappy about beans, then I, and I don't know that that's going to happen, but it's a possibility, then I will nonetheless have the joy.
Yes. Oh, yes. I do get joy from eating, believe me. I've always had a big
appetite.
So
that's all I'm saying, that we can remain focused on what is joyous, even though there are certainly enough to moan about.
Right. Yes, exactly.
I said hello to my my granddaughter's friend who's having a really hard time. And I looked at her and I said, life's a bitch.
Yeah.
And she broke out laughing. It was like so the right thing to say to her. I think everybody had been trying to convince her that everything was okay. Well, it's not, and that's okay. As Elizabeth Cooper Ross used to say to us, you're not okay, and I'm not okay, and that's okay.
Very disappointing was I
She was the one who told me that I don't need to sleep. I complained to her about not giving us enough time to sleep, and she said, well, my goodness, really, you know, if you're going to be doing this kind of work, then you have got to relieve yourself of the notion that you need to sleep. And I was quite astonished, and I said to her, no, we're talking about sleep here. This is like a basic, this is like food, water, this isn't a negotiable thing. And she said, what you are lacking is rest, not sleep.
I rest, but I don't sleep. Without a sleeping pill.
So if you need to use only resting as an excuse for being fuzzy or for having a bad attitude or whatever else, you can. But what Elizabeth taught me was it is an excuse. And there's never any reason to say, I'm this way due to lack of sleep.
I'm just foggy all day long and feel,
understand that you wish to say
all
that.
Day long
I totally give you the right to say that, and I also give you the right to not say it.
Uh-huh. I just don't know what to do for it, so I don't know.
Then you're not resting. Then you're like, BSing me when you say you're resting, because if you were resting, you wouldn't be foggy.
Yes, I rest all day, and when I have to get up to pee or force myself to walk, I can barely walk because I have so little energy, and, you know, I'm a thin person. I just don't know what else I can do.
Interesting that you changed the subject.
Can you tell me more, please?
Yeah. You were saying that you were fuzzy and foggy.
Oh, sleepy.
And I was saying that it is not sleep deprivation that makes one fuzzy and foggy, but rest deprivation. And that if you really were resting, when you said you were resting, you would not be fuzzy and foggy. And therefore, we look for not something we cannot get, which is sleep, but something we can get, which is rest. And perhaps when you say you are resting, you are not actually resting.
Yes, I am resting because I'm so exhausted.
Then how is it you are foggy and without energy? Resting energizes you and makes you sharp.
When I get up, I still have very little energy, and I think I can only relate it to the the scoliosis.
What I'm saying, and I will say it only once more, when you are really resting, you are resting in the field of all energy. When you are really resting, you are resting in the field of clarity and mental acuity. When you are resting, you are completely healed and completely restored. Even a little bit of resting can be miraculous in its effects on us. And most people tend to confuse not doing something with resting. They can be synonymous, but they aren't necessarily. And if someone were to say to me, I've been doing weight-bearing exercise 3 times a week for the past 2 months, and I'm not strong enough to tie my shoelaces, I would say there's something wrong with your weight-bearing exercise. That exercise should make you strong enough to tie your shoelaces, at the very least. And so that's what I am saying, that the proof is in the pudding. If you're resting, then you are clear and you have energy. It's straightforward as that.
My mind is clear.
Find a way. Stop pursuing sleep. Give it up totally. You will never again sleep. Just give it up. Whatever sleep you get is a gift. But you can seek out really deep relaxation.
Okay. I don't want...
That you're really relaxed.
Yes.
Because you will experience the energy of all existence.
Okay. I hear you.
When you say you're relaxing, what are you doing?
I absolutely, because I I'm in pain. I just lay there and I deem my mind and I pray, I meditate, and I breathe and I rest. And I get to the point where, oh, I can't do this anymore because I have to switch from side to side.
Sounds like you're sinking in, and what I'd like you to do is sink out. So the next time you're resting, I'd like you to come to focus at the tip of your nose.
Focus on the tip of my nose?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And then let your nose grow like Pinocchio's nose.
Uh-huh.
And keep your focus on the growing tip of it.
Keep my focus on it growing.
Keep your focus at the tip.
Yes.
Not on the growing, but at the tip. So you are the part that is growing. You are the part that is moving further and further away.
Does that mean my eyes are looking at the tip of my nose, or I'm just thinking, focusing on without looking at it?
I think it would be much better to do it with your eyes closed.
Eyes closed. Okay. Okay. The other thing that I just wanted to, I thank you for that. I'll try that. The other thing I wanted to bring up is the last year, I was diagnosed with SIBO. I've been on a low FODMAP diet for a year and 3 months now. And I got retested, and I still have a serious SIBO. So
I'm not understanding the word that you're saying. Could you explain it to us?
Oh, SIBO is I don't know what it's SIBO. It's small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. So there's a problem in my small intestine with bacteria. I have chosen not to go on antibiotics. That is one choice. Or I went to a GI doc expecting that he would want me to get a colonoscopy. But he doesn't give colonoscopies anymore because he found that testing people to see what's wrong and helping them, such as what he found in me with a stool test and breath test, that I needed to, because I was just farting all the time. I had so much gas, and I used to eat, nutritiously. So they put you on a low FODMAP diet. There are so many foods that are high in FODMAPs. So my gas has gotten less, less. But it's still there, and I still, whenever I eat anything nutritious like that is high FODMAP, like garlic and onions and cauliflower and broccoli and all those healthy things, the farting just gets so bad, it's ridiculous. I can't even, it's ridiculous, like all day long farting. I realized when I gave up eggs that it wasn't quite so bad, but it's still bad. So I've just about had it. I don't know what else to try. I hate to go on antibiotics, but maybe I think you can help me instead of going on antibiotics, which kill all, everything. I hate to start again, because antibiotics kill everything. And when I did that years ago, I never got rid of my dysbiosis. I always had, that trouble. Is there anything that you can suggest? I don't have an appointment until December 1st. I've been waiting for 3 months to see him, and he's going to give me the results of the test, the breath and the stool test, which still showed that I have that problem. But I'm going to tell him, look, this hasn't worked. What do you have next in your bag of tricks? But I wanted to call you to see if you had anything in your bag of tricks.
There's a missing piece here, and I'm not sure what it is.
Oh.
there's some major stressor that's occurring here, and I'm not sure what it is. This is what I'm hearing you say,
uh-huh.
is that you are drinking nourishing herbal infusions, which you make by weighing out one ounce of a nourishing herb like stinging nettle or oat straw, and you're rotating through the five main herbs, drinking about a quarter a day, that you're eating a healthy diet of well-cooked food, limited now by the FODMAP diet, but nonetheless as broad as you can make it, and even with all of those things out, there's still a lot of things that you can eat.
Not too many.
There's a major list of fruits and vegetables that you can still eat. No, it's not as many as it was before, but the idea is never to make your diet limited.
Yeah, I know, but this...
Even though I'm not eating lentils or beans right now and haven't been able to tolerate them my intestinal surgery, I nonetheless try them out at least once a month. I have a spoonful of beans or lentils or, something like that hummus to see how my body is reacting now and to say, we're going to work this out because this is part of my healthy diet. This is going to be part of my diet. You can't refuse this.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, that's my attitude toward it. And yes, you know, there's still times when I eat something and it causes pain. I say, okay, you have to back off of that. Again, but it doesn't mean that there's something wrong with me. It means that I'm just not there yet.
Right.
It might take a while. But what I hear, so my spiral is expanding.
Right.
It may not be expanding by much, but when I look back, you know, wow, when I got out of surgery, I was basically eating, you know, mashed potatoes without the skins. And really enjoying other people eating salad, but there's no way I was going to be able to eat it. Brie cheese, you know, goat cheese. Really simple, simple things, right?
Yeah.
A lot of meat. My body, you know, just said, you have to give me the easiest thing to digest, which is meat. So anytime someone's in a, you know, really serious situation of feeling like they're not getting enough energy, enough food, then I ask them to think about eating more meat.
I do that, yep.
Good.
What is the missing
piece? What is the missing stressor here? Are you living in a moldy basement? Are you living with a person who you are terrified with? Are you in a war zone? I mean, something else must be happening.
No, I can't. Honestly, I cannot. To give you an example, I eat a variety of things that are low FODMAP, but I it's still limited. My husband has to weigh out everything. I can't have over a certain amount or it's too much. For example, I love asparagus. I used to eat, you know, bowls of it. I can only have one half of a spear because it's a very high FODMAP food. So that's what I do with the foods that I do eat. And I'm not allowed any onions or garlic at all, and I used to eat those every single day.
Tell me about the things you can eat in quantity.
Oh, well, it's nothing is in quantity. Everything is limited because, the FODMAPs are...
Not everything is a FODMAP.
Well, you look it up.
There are lists of things that are... I've seen the list. High FODMAP... Medium FODMAP and low or no FODMAP. And generally, the low or no FODMAP things you can eat as much as you want of.
No, it's still limited.
You are choosing that limit.
That's what I'm told to do.
I'm telling you that's a choice you're making. You know? In general, on the diet, they ask you to eliminate high FODMAP foods. limit and weigh out medium FODMAP foods and to eat the low to no FODMAP foods as you will, because otherwise your body goes into survival and nothing you eat is going to nourish you. You're going to feel like hibernating.
Well, I don't feel deprived. I'm full after every meal because I consume so much of the variety.
So I don't know how to deal with this conversation, because in this conversation, when I ask you what you can eat, you're telling me half a spear of asparagus.
Oh,
so
I will tell you.
I think what I need to do is to say green blessings to you for now, because I'm feeling more and more and more frustrated, because what I'm hearing is somehow not matching up with the very next thing that you say. I'm so glad that you called, Rose, and I hope you call back again. Green blessings.
Thank you. Good blessings. Green blessings.
All right. And I'll remind everyone, if you've got a question and would like to speak live with Susan this evening, just press 1 and that will get you lined up in the queue. We'll go next to the next caller that has their hand raised from the 804 area code. And from the 804, you are live with Susan.
Woohoo, that's me. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Thanks for waiting.
Yay, it's Lucretia.
Hey, Lucretia. How are you tonight?
Hey. Hey, Susan. Hey, Sarah Ellen. I'm driving, so I'm going to pull over right now.
Okay.
I wanted to call for the 31st to say happy 20th anniversary from when I was an apprentice there.
Wow! That was fun. Happy anniversary!
I so wanted to be there at the last Moon Lodge this year, but could not make it. But then when I listened to that show from the 31st, I was so happy to hear you sing that song, because I was there when that song was created. So two things. I really want to sing that song with you, and then I also had a question about something else.
Okay. Sing first?
All right. Yes, yeah, sing first. All right.
To my sweet juices,
my sweet juices flow. Driving my partner and my child crazy, and I don't know what to do. So do you have any suggestions? Can you give me some, like, understanding of what snoring is? Because there's so much information about it, obviously. But, yeah, I haven't done any sleep studies or anything, and I don't really notice it, but they definitely notice it.
Right.
We live in a one-room town, so...
So it is really noticeable. Generally, what we now know is that snoring is a mild form of sleep apnea. In other words, you're not breathing really well.
Okay.
And that's because the airway has collapsed.
Okay.
And when it's straight up apnea, then the airway is collapsed and you actually stop breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you kind of go snort and wake up a little bit and start breathing again.
Mm-hmm.
And in snoring, it's mild, because it's not that far that you're not actually stopping breathing, but the breathing is very much interfered with.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing that's usually tried is positional.
Mm-hmm.
If you put another pillow under your head, or you sleep on a wedge pillow that props you up. I remember being at Monticello, Thomas Jefferson's home, and going on the tour inside, and we're looking at Thomas Jefferson's bed, and it's like 4 feet long. And I said, wait a second, I thought Thomas Jefferson was like a big, tall man. I know, you know, that previous people to us were much shorter, but still. And they said, oh, no, no, no. Everybody slept sitting up.
Mm. Okay.
They all had bad lungs, so they all slept sitting up.
Hmm.
So position is exceptionally useful if the obstruction in the airway comes from body mass.
Okay.
My big brother sleeps best in his reclining chair.
Mm-hmm.
And he can get it tilted to the exact degree that he sleeps without snoring or going into sleep apnea.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sometimes just switching off and sleeping on your side can be enough.
I'm a big side sleeper, but I definitely think the pillows are kind of flat. So that might, mm-hmm. I will try that. What about mouth guards?
Those are the kinds of things that sound really good and look really good, but you really only do them a few times, and then you just get really fed up with it.
Yeah, it doesn't. I can't imagine trying to sleep with something in my other than my teeth and my tongue.
if you need another thing to stuff around the block about not doing, it's a good thing, but. You could just, skip the trip and say, that looks really good, but I probably wouldn't do that thing.
Okay.
Right.
All right. So, and then any, breathing techniques, perhaps? Any kind of specific, pranayama of any specific kind or anything like that would make a difference, you think?
Well, it's not that you're not breathing. You are breathing, but something interferes with your breathing, right?
Mm.
It's like if you were doing pranayama and someone suddenly came and put their hand over your nose and mouth.
Okay.
So the airway, as I said, the airway is actually collapsing.
Okay.
And that's why if breathing made your way stronger, so maybe something like Ujjayi breath might be better. Do you know what Ujjayi breath is?
Is the three-part? Is that the three-part breath?
No, Ujjayi breath is the one where you can hear it. You're breathing through your nose, and I'm going to be as loud as I possibly can.
Right.
You don't want to sound like an ox in labor, right? I'm exaggerating so you can hear it over the phone.
No, I remember which one you mean. Okay.
You're really clamping down around your airways and then forcing the air through them.
Yeah. Okay. I remember that.
Yeah.
All right.
So that could very easily help to tone those. That's what we're looking at. Sing more.
Yes. All right. I can do that.
Okay. And especially sing before you go to sleep.
Okay. I like that.
And
all right.
Experiment with the sleeping herbs and see if any of them stop the snoring.
Okay.
It's November. And November means next year. November means I have to produce my 2024 schedule for my workshops. I have to produce my 2024 schedule for my healthy life programs. I have to produce my... It's like, hi, here it is, 2024. So that's what I'm focusing on next year at Healthy Life is the sleeping herbs.
Okay. All right.
And it's fascinating to me. I decided there probably weren't enough sleeping herbs. So I was going to do sleeping herbs and dream herbs, but most of the sleeping herbs are considered dream herbs, too.
Okay.
Even ashwagandha is considered to be a big-time dream herb.
I didn't know that one. Okay. All right. All right.
So do some experimenting, right?
Mm-hmm.
What
mm-hmm.
happens if you drink hops tea before you go to sleep?
Hmm.
Do you snore
okay.
more? Do you snore less? Do you have to get up and pee?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll do that.
Yeah.
I know they will appreciate it.
Some experiment time and see what you come up with and then call back and share with us.
I definitely will. Okay.
Okay.
Cool. Well, a lot of love
to me, this
to
is
you
the best of herbal medicine,
and,
right? Where we say,
yes,
okay,
getting to play.
You know, let's not look for the root of the problem. Let's just really deal with the problem and see how herbs affect it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, getting to play.
We have these relationships, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, awesome. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I love you.
All right, it was good. I love you, too.
Green blessings.
Have a great night. I'll be listening. Green blessings.
Bye-bye.
All right, and I'll remind everyone, if you've got a question and would like to speak live with Susan this evening, just press 1, and that will get your hand raised in the queue. And at this time, we don't have anyone who has their hand raised yet. We do have an email question that I can go to if you'd like to go to that.
That sounds lovely.
All right. Hi, Susan. A friend brought up the idea of living wills and the various considerations she was including in her wishes, and it really got me wondering on some stuff. So, I would like your shamanic opinion on dying. Do you think that being medicated to the point of being unconscious or unable to wake up during the dying process and a death impacts what happens to a person after they are dead? Like, for instance, the drug's impact lasting into the crossing over, or the forced state of unconscious preventing a person from being fully present for their own death, affecting what comes next. Thank you so much for all you share, and especially your answer on this.
Well, I'm kind of flipping through my card deck here, trying to see what the appropriate images would be. You know, we talk about various bodies. Mostly what we talk about in this show is the physical body and things that are going on with the physical body. But you'll also hear people talking about things like the astral body, right? Or you might hear them talking about the auric body or the energy body. I've even heard people talk about the pain body. But even those bodies are still associated with me, my individuality. And how wonderful, because that's what we have to share with each other, is our individuality. And that individuality ends at my death. And what happens is I don't have a body anymore. I don't have any kind of body. I have a being. I am being. I am energy, right? Energy equals mass times the speed of light squared, E equals mc2. Right now I'm mass. When I'm dead, I'm energy. Like sugar and starch, mass and energy flow back and forth, but they're definitely different. So what happens to our body doesn't predicate how our energy is. It's what happens to our energy that predicates how our energy is. Even though my body was insensate for 17 hours while crews of surgeons did a huge variety of things, I can know the energy of what happened. There are few places where they did give me drugs that completely blocked memory. And so I can't get into those. Those are sealed from me, but most of it I have access to. Were I to have died on that operating table, and there were several times when they thought that I would, the fact that I was under deep anesthesia would not have changed my energy. It changes my body's response to what's going on. Thank goodness, blessed be. So, what my teachers have told me is don't worry so much about your dying, worry about your living. And don't really worry at all. Worry's not a good choice of word there, Susan. Don't fret about your dying. Throw yourself into your living. Be greater. Be bigger. Expand. Look at all the options. You don't have to choose them. You don't have to agree with them. You don't have to think they're right. But that's where you'll be when you're only being and you're not on body anymore. And then you will see that it doesn't matter right or wrong, because it's all Leela, it's all play. It's so good that we can choose beforehand. It can be so freeing to know that others don't have to make life choices for us. It can be very difficult, very, very difficult if someone's in extremis and you don't know what they want. And it's certainly easier if they've already made a living will and told you what they wanted. But it's still all Leela. It's still all play. Some plays are fun and some plays are tragedies. So enjoy all acts of beauty and pleasure are in honor of her. Green blessings.
All right. And it does look like we have a hand that has come up in the queue from the 734 area code. I'll remind everyone one more time, you have opportunity to speak live with Susan. All you need to do is press 1. We'll see your hand go up in the queue. And first, we'll open the line in the 734 area code. You are live with Susan from the 734.
Hi. Hi, Susan. Can you hear me?
Hi.
My name's Lindsay. Thanks for providing this wonderful resource for people to get to tap into your wisdom. I appreciate it. I called once like maybe 4 months ago or so when I first got diagnosed with lupus nephritis. And since then, I have been doing what you recommended. I've been drinking a lot of herbal infusions. I started drinking them like you had mentioned you did. Like, I wasn't even drinking water. I was just drinking, like, carrying, I was making, like, three of them on rotation. And I've slowed down a little bit just because life got a little hectic. But I've also been taking all of these recommended pharmaceuticals. And I went to the doctor, and they said, well, your kidney functions fine, but you still, like, your protein, like, I'm peeing out protein, and it's increasing. We got to figure out how to stop this, you know? And it's really, like, not a tangible thing for me to grasp onto because, like, you can't feel your kidneys. And I've been trying to tap into the spiritual realm because you had told me that the wolf was eating me alive.
You feel your kidneys because they don't have any nerve endings.
Right, I know. So it's like I don't, like, know how to connect to, like, you know, like you have a muscle spasm, you can, like, do stretches and massage it.
Can you put your hands on your kidneys?
I kind of know they're on my lower back area, right?
They are not on your lower back area.
Oh, okay. Where are they?
I want you to take either hand, the left or the right, but just one of them. And fold the elbow up behind your back.
Uh-huh.
And kind of feel around. Can you feel your rib cage there? And
yeah,
your spine?
I can.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
So your kidneys lie right next to your spine, right at the lowest part of the rib cage. The kidneys are protected by your ribs.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
Right,
well, I mean,
so you probably couldn't get
them, but
both hands on your kidneys, but you could, as a matter of fact.
I guess I did learn from Outlander, if you stab somebody upwards in the back, you could hit their kidneys, so.
Right, there you go. So if you're doing energy work, I find it really helps to know really where what you're directing energy
That's true.
Okay. Right, I mean, it should work anyhow, but somehow it does work better if you actually know where it is. And what I also suggest is that you do it with one hand on one kidney and then switch off.
Okay. Okay.
So that you're actually directing energy, and you can direct energy from the earth, you can direct energy from the sky. You can pull in any kind of energy you want. All doorways are doorways to wholeness.
Okay, well, I definitely need to work on that practice some more, refine that a little more. So that
you don't have to tell your kidneys what to do. Your kidneys, I believe, were, just like our kidneys, created in perfection. And that perfection is still there. Your kidneys are not expressing that perfection right now, but it's not for you or me or anybody else to tell your kidneys how to be perfect again.
Yeah. Well, I'm at a crossroads.
All we want to do is have it be the reality. You see, our minds are designed to focus on what's wrong.
Yeah.
They really are. It's not a fault. That's what your mind is supposed to do. It's supposed to say, that's wrong, and that's wrong, and that's wrong. Remember when that bad thing happened, and then this bad thing could happen. That is how it's supposed to be. But we can, like, you know, we can not fall prey to it.
And try to express more gratitude for all the things that are right.
And more just seeing it. As that.
Yeah.
That
so
that this particular hassle is a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
And wow, I may be really hassled by it. Well, that might be the blessing that maybe right then I just really need to be hassled. <It's> like,
yeah.
kinder we can be to ourselves, the better. Right?
That's true. Yes, and I'm definitely very self-deprecating and working on that. I'm at a crossroads, and I was wondering if you could maybe sway me in one direction. I mean, I just wondered, so some of these medicinals, or not medicinals, some of the pharmaceuticals that I'm taking, one of them is, contraindicated with astragalus, and one of the things you recommended was astragalus, but this is where I don't understand what's happening, because, the doctors want to suppress my immune system.
Let's talk about herb-drug interactions, first of all. Okay. So my experience is this. While I was working on writing Abundantly Well, and this was pre-COVID, so I was out and about teaching a lot, maybe meeting 6,000 people a year, I ask at every conference I was at, every workshop I taught, has anyone here seen herb-drug interactions, and what are they? And in that 2 years, I did not find a single person who had had or seen any herb-drug interaction.
Okay.
I do not think they exist.
I tend to believe you on that. I tend to agree with you on that for sure.
I think that it could be a problem if you took an active ingredient from an herb and took that at the same time you were taking a drug. I could certainly see that could be a problem. It might possibly be a problem if you were using the herb powdered and in a capsule, but the bigger problem would be if the wrong thing was in that capsule. What seems to have happened is that science has looked at plants and said, oh, this plant contains a chemical which does this in the body, therefore you can't take it with this drug which does that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember years ago
at
a big herb gathering, there was an herbalist there who was a surgeon. And I said to him, so all the surgeons say you can't take ginkgo, you can't take vitamin E, you can't take this, 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 and this before surgery because it will cause bleeding. And he said, that is so much hornswoggle. He says, there's absolutely no evidence. And I certainly tell all of the people I'm going to operate on, keep taking your herbs. Keep taking your herbs. They'll make you healthy.
Yeah. Well, that's
so
what I want to do.
We're taking a really, you know, like a Chinese combination formula with 20 herbs. I'd be a little eek about you using drugs. But astragalus, I am fine. It's not going to make the drug ineffective. It's not going to make the drug too effective.
I think it might cause diarrhea is what I read.
So, has it?
I don't know. It's hard to say. I can't tell what's causing anything. I mean, I do, but I had this before I was diagnosed with this. You know, I'd have some loose stools with certain foods and stuff that I would eat. So I really can't say for sure.
Diarrhea is far more than just loose stools.
Oh, yeah. Then no, I don't think.
Diarrhea is usually watery and copious.
Yeah. No, it hasn't. It's mostly just soft, very soft.
Loosened
loose
things up.
I just don't want to take the medicines anymore, and I'm nervous if I stop taking them that they won't keep doing labs for me to see if maybe just the herbs are improving, you know, because I wonder if they're working against each other.
So do you have to tell them?
Suppressing.
Do you have to tell them you're not taking the drugs?
I guess I don't. There's one that they test levels for it in my body, so if I wasn't taking it, maybe they would know, but the other one, no, I guess you're right. Maybe I know. Why didn't I think of it like that?
If what you want to do is be monitored and you think that you need to have
something to make
taking drugs in order to be monitored, then I don't think that it's a mortal sin.
To, okay. You're right. I could. I might just do that. Okay. No, that's what I needed to hear. That's exactly why I called. What I needed to hear. I guess I just needed to hear some kind of permission, and I didn't think of it like that. Like, oh, yeah, okay. I could try just going off of them until my next appointment, and then.
And then see.
I could see if my protein levels have, you know, changed at all, gone up or down.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. You actually, thanks.
It is a little bit devious, but yeah, really, in the realm of what goes on, not.
Will they know if I'm, why didn't, I just didn't even think to ask myself that. That's so funny. I even went through dual care with a midwife and told them the last minute, like, yeah, I'm not going to come here. I was just using you for ultrasounds and stuff.
Right.
You know, and they're like, oh, man.
What?
So, yeah, I could do that. Okay.
All right.
Thank you for giving me that sway and confidence that I needed.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. I appreciate it. I'll be sure to call back and follow up, but, you know, if I
I'm so
find
glad.
Out,
yes.
if you want.
Keep us involved in the next installment.
I did not hear what you said, but thank you.
Be sure to keep us involved to call back and give us the next installment.
That's okay. That's
okay.
Good. Thank you. Yes, I will. Okay, you have a good evening.
You too.
Blessings to you.
Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, and looks like at this time we don't have any hands that are raised. We've got about 8 minutes. However, I do see that Dr. Kathleen King is in the queue and on the line.
Oh, well, let me go ahead and introduce her. I was looking around to see if I could find this article that I saw. It was in one of the health newsletters that I get. It wasn't in some, like, radical thing. It was just ordinary study where they gave people a blend of antioxidant herbs, mostly in the mint family, and asked them to use a teaspoonful of it in their food every day. And after doing that for 6 months, all of their markers for disease were down. The risk for kidney disease, heart disease, diabetes, high blood pressure, all were heading towards normal from including a teaspoon of antioxidant herbs in their food. Wow, no wonder drinking nourishing herbal infusions makes such an enormous difference if just a teaspoon of herb can do that for us.
Wow.
It's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Kathleen King. Kathleen with a C and King with a K, a physical therapist who's passionate about teaching neuroscience-based practices targeting the brain and nervous system. Dr. Kathleen King is the CEO and founder of the Primal Trust Academy and Community. She weaves together brain retraining, vagus nerve toning, somatic movement, and trauma-informed attachment repair techniques in her online worldwide platform. Her focus is to help people with self-healing from chronic illness and trauma patterns. She has personally found freedom from over a decade of debilitating health, chronic Lyme disease, chronic fatigue syndrome, mold toxicity, PTSD, and more. And Dr. King has been presenting as an expert on nervous system healing to both traditional medical providers and mind-body healing communities. We are so honored to have you with us tonight. Thank you for being here, Dr. King.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
We can.
Oh, great. Good.
Thank you very, very well. So, wow, you basically got fed up with what wasn't helping you and found what did help you.
Yeah, you could say that. I had a nice wake-up call in learning how to live my life differently through the whole process. Yeah.
how did that come about for you?
Yeah. Well, I spent many, many years trying to, first of all, figure out what was wrong and fix myself, and all sorts of diagnoses from Lyme disease to mold toxicity to parasites and viral infections, and, you know, went from doctor to doctor. And I got to the point where I was actually so sensitive, I couldn't even handle a lot of supplements and herbs and even homeopathics. I would just overreact to everything. And I was like, how am I ever going to get better if I can't even handle these treatments? And it was a pretty scary place because I had two small children and I was just losing my function. And I did have a background as a physical therapist, and I just thought, well, you know, I used to work with chronic pain, and I used to teach people how to turn down those pain receptors in their brain with all sorts of mind-body exercises, and the brain modulated pain. Well, maybe it modulates the immune system and the detoxification system, and if I can't even handle these treatments, I was just left with myself, with my self-talk, with my perceptions, and with my brain and my own nervous system. And so I really focused on that and on changing my lifestyle and changing the way I perceived my reality. And kind of like you were talking earlier, the mind tends to just focus on what was bad and all of the diagnosis and what's wrong, et cetera. And brain retraining is about teaching your brain to perceive yourself differently, to perceive your body differently. And, you know, the body tends to follow along when we do that. And that's exactly what happened, and I started to self-heal from there.
Wow. Yay you. It takes a lot of guts to say, I'm not going to get to the root of this problem. I'm going to deal with what's happening right here, right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I also had to realize that what I was doing wasn't working, that I couldn't force myself to, I couldn't force myself to heal by freaking out all the time, going from doctor to doctor, worrying, and it just wasn't working. And I needed to face that reality, and that was really hard to let go of trying to force my body to heal with all sorts of protocols when I was in a stress response. It wasn't responding. And, you know, it was almost like my body was rejecting supplements, herbs, medicines because I was in so much stress. And those, you know, one time I actually had a vision where I was seeing that I was putting these, you know, these herbs into my body and these supplements in my body, and they had a high frequency. But my internal body, the frequency was so disharmonious. It wasn't, it was almost like I rejected love. I rejected the intelligence of these plants, the intelligence of the supplements. I was rejecting life itself. And of course I couldn't partner with healing substances because my whole nervous system was literally pushing love, light, and healing out. That's when I realized I need to focus on my internal world so that I can partner with things like herbs and supplements and homeopathic, et cetera, because I was rejecting them.
I have been really looking at and talking to people about what I call after the surgery, after the trauma, after the diagnosis, after the chemotherapy, after the war, after the rape, after. Even if you're cured, even if you're okay, even if you're still alive, it seems like everybody just evaporates after, and they leave you, oh, well, you have post-traumatic stress disorder. But
yeah.
I think that, and I'm really interested in your opinion on this, I think that we need to change the D. It's not a disorder. It's not a disease. It can be discovery. It
yeah.
certainly needs to be a declaration. Others need to hear from us
mm-hmm.
about what happened. And I think mm-hmm. that ultimately it needs to be delight.
Oh, that is beautiful. Discovery, declaration, and delight. Yes. Yes, that gives
yeah.
me chills. Wow.
Because it's not just that you've had this difficulty, these traumas. It's that every human being has been traumatized. Being born is traumatic.
Mm. Yes.
We can, you know, calm it down a little bit, but it's, by its very nature, it's very traumatic. And it's traumatic for the woman who gives birth, too. And being a child is traumatic. And going to high school, goodness only knows, is traumatic. It's just, you know, life is just kind of one trauma after the other. So I think that what the work that you're doing is so critical to every human being.
Mm-hmm.
Because so many people may not even know what the vagus nerve is. So could you tell us a little about that and how what you're doing impacts the vagus nerve or how you're interacting with it?
Sure. Well, the vagus nerve is also called the wandering nerve because it literally does wander throughout our body from our brainstem down our throat into our chest and our diaphragm into our stomach. And it really helps to regulate so much of our body function, our organs, our autonomic nervous system. And if you want your body to heal, a lot of times targeting the vagus nerve is one of the most direct paths to doing that, to helping that nerve, the function, be optimized, because it's responsible for bringing the body into rest, digest, and repair. And when it is not functioning optimally, we are often stuck in a sympathetic overdrive or even some type of collapse, because it's just the way the body eventually responds to so much stress. And so the vagus nerve is something that we can all easily start to optimize, much like a muscle that you'd go to the gym to strengthen. You can strengthen the function of your vagus nerve with simple breathing exercises, singing, humming, cold exposure. There's eye exercises. There's a lot of things that you can do. And I find that when people start to tone their vagus nerve, their chronic symptoms, their digestion, their detoxification, their immune system starts to shift, and they start to get better.
Well, I had no idea that cold was a beneficial stressor to the vagus nerve, because although I'm certainly no big fan of jumping into cold water, I am a very big fan of letting yourself get cold in the fall.
I think your intuition is there. Yeah.
Turn on the heat in your house. Let yourself shiver a little.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think about anciently, we let ourselves get cold. We didn't have these heaters, and we have stopped a lot of natural human experience and have suppressed certain things that actually strengthen our immune system. And what you're speaking of does help to strengthen our immune system. And I think that's why it happens slowly in the fall, so we can start letting ourselves get cold. And by the time winter comes, our body is more robust at creating its own internal heat and handling infection and things like that.
Yes, exactly.
Cool.
And I don't know if you've heard me talking to this woman who told me that she was well rested, but she had no energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, what Elizabeth Kubler-Ross said to me is, you know, sleep, you don't need sleep at all, but you absolutely have to have rest.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about rest as deeply engaging that whole vagus nerve and that relaxation
mm-hmm.
response that we can train ourselves to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. I mean, it is teaching our, we've often lost the ability to get into a parasympathetic state in our culture. Like, we are rushing around, we're texting, we're this and that. We've almost lost the ability to get that deep rest and get that vagus nerve toning up as a way of being. I agree with that 100%, that deep rest is strengthening, that relaxation is strengthening the vagal tone of the body.
And that's the real energy.
Mm-hmm.
That when people
mm-hmm.
say, oh, I'm tired all the time, I think, no, you're exhausting yourself all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
So
do
you have any particular ways that you help people to do this that you could share with listeners?
Sure, yeah. I mean, one of the best ways is doing very relaxing breath work. And there's a handful of practices that we usually start with. One of them is a simple practice called the physiological sigh that was something I learned from a neuroscientist named Andrew Huberman, and where they tested that this particular breath practice is one of the quickest ways to turn on the parasympathetic nervous system. And it's done very simply where, and a lot of us do it naturally to calm down. It's where you breathe in, so you breathe in, and then breathe in a little bit more, and then exhale in a, so it's like a two breath in. So it's a breath in, breathe in a little more.
You sound exactly like someone enjoying some cannabis.
Exactly. You know, so they're doing the physiological sigh.
Right, they're doing it. Come on.
It wasn't the cannabis at all. It was the breath pattern.
Right, exactly. I actually had a researcher tell me that she was, had to train people how to smoke cannabis, and she said while she was doing it, she realized, she said, it wasn't the weed, it was the breathing that she was training them to do.
yeah, exactly. Well, that's it. So that's a great reminder of how to do that. And just doing 5 or 10 of those right there is going to shift you from a sympathetic state to a parasympathetic state. Now, you have to take the time to do that, and that's part of it. But what it does is when you get into that parasympathetic state, you're like, oh, this should be my resting point. And then you start to become more aware when you're not in that space, when you're in that sympathetic or anxiety or rushing around space. And so the physiological sigh is just a super easy one. You can teach it to kids. I teach it to my kids. You know, when I notice they're like running around, talking a million miles an hour, we'll do a few physiological sighs, and then I'll say, okay, now tell me about your day.
Ah. Oh. I really enjoy things like that that we can use with the whole family.
Mm-hmm.
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 And it's so important to have these practices available to us because they're very elegant ways of dealing with the stress of being alive.
Yeah.
And if we're not
we
given
need a whole arsenal.
then we will fall prey to the inelegant ones.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. I say to everybody, we all need a toolkit of self-regulation in this day and age because we are bombarded in a million ways, and we all need to have tools that we know that we can turn to when, you know, when shit hits the fan.
When the fan is blowing your way, the shit is always hitting the fan, but it's just not
it's
always
true.
Blowing your way.
Yes. Better said.
But it will, don't worry. Or as one of my teachers once blessed me, she said, may you live long enough to see all the things that can happen at least twice. Okay. Here we go, this one again, all right. So, you found yourself that what you had been doing of getting a diagnosis and treating the diagnosis was, in fact, imprisoning you, and you set yourself free.
Yes, that's exactly what happened, because it was giving me these identities of a sick person, someone with an incurable illness person, and they started to stack up, and I slowly forgot who I was, and all I could think of myself was the perception of a sick person after a while, and I had to reclaim my identity to get well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I once had an apprentice who was literally the poster child for a chronic problem. And within a couple of weeks of being here, I could see her problems starting to shift. And she came to me and she said, you know, I have to leave. And I said, why is that? She said, because I can't betray everyone by getting well.
Yeah. Hey, at least she was aware.
Right.
Most people aren't. They're victim to it. They just quit and they don't acknowledge why they're quitting. At least
she's honest. She said, no, you know, I'm like the face of this problem. I can't get over it.
Oh. Yeah.
You know, what dedication. What a bodhisattva.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I tell people a lot who have, like, their Instagram handle of Lyme Warrior and Lyme this and Lyme that. I'm like, you've just created your identity. And if you want to get well, you want to get rid of that name from your Instagram handle.
So you have done a lot in the past. And that also means that you're thinking about what you're going to do in the future. What exciting thing do you have in mind?
You know, I feel like I'm at this phase where I really want to ground into more of my local community and be a resource and a support for them. You know, I've spent the last several years building up this online business and serving people all over, but I feel like it's almost ungrounding because I'm energetically in the ether and I'm like, wait a minute, I need to be able to serve our community because at some point we're going to be really relying on our local community for all sorts of resource exchange, I believe. And just that feeling of like, come into your local community, how can you serve, how can you be a resource, how can you, you know, land and get your roots back where the local community is, because we got so ungrounded during COVID being online. So that's where I feel like my future is heading.
Oh, I like that. I like that. Mm-hmm. So your unique approach to regulating the nervous system is not only applicable worldwide, but most importantly, it's applicable right where you live and to the people around you.
Yeah.
And that does something very, very special. Tell me what parts work is and what an adult main personality is. I think I sometimes say to people, you know, you can have lines on your road and stop signs. And that sounds to me like the adult main personality, somebody who, like, just brings a little order here. Hi.
Yeah, yeah. Well, here's what it isn't.
Okay.
I'm somebody who ran around freaking out, constantly listening to the worries in my head, not able to self-regulate because, as a child, I had no regulating adults around me. I didn't know what a self-regulated adult that could hold space for emotions, that could feel into their needs and could feel my needs and could feel my emotions and help me assimilate them. And so as an adult, I didn't have a self-regulated inner self. And I had a mentor who said, you know, I was just always freaking out about my diagnoses and my illness. And she said, Kat, you need to put your big girl pants on and start to, you know, stop freaking out here. And it's like, what? And she's like, you need to adult yourself. And I'm like, how? And she was a model for me of a healthy adult main personality, meaning she had a main brain state that managed all of her freaking out parts inside of her and that made decisions that were for the benefit of the whole of her whole persona. And I realized I was missing that. And so I began to go on that journey to study and to understand her, this mentor of mine, like, how does she operate? How does she self-manage? What does she do when she gets sick? Does she freak out? Does she go to a million doctors? Does she take a million things? Or how does she handle life's difficulties? And I started to learn how to train myself to do that. And I started to understand that I have parts of me who are scared or protective or fix-it-aholics that were running the show of my brain state. And so a part is, it's actually a neural network. It's a memory structure that has a memory, emotion, belief, and behavior that is almost like a sub-personality that can take over and hijack your brain. Like, let's say, you know, your partner or your spouse does something that upsets you, you could have a protective part take over and start screaming at them, right? So you got hijacked in that moment, and that's just because you have a part, a memory, emotion, belief, and behavior that is trying to keep you safe from an old way. Well, my parts were taking over my brain all the time, and I didn't have a healthy prefrontal, I did not have healthy access to my prefrontal cortex or my healthy adult main personality to run the show. Does that explain? I don't know if that came across.
Yeah. Yeah, there needs to be somebody who says, we're putting a traffic light here. You can't just go roaring through here.
Yes. Yes, you can't just hijack my brain state right now
and
start doing whatever you want.
No, there's a stop sign here. There's a yield sign here. You have to stay on the road.
Yeah.
You know, we can all share here. We can all, you know, get our needs met. But somebody just getting what they want probably is not going to work out. So let's, you know, let's cohabit here. Let's get it together.
Yeah.
My friend Miriam Dyack did voice dialogue, in which you literally gave voice to all of the various parts. And then the first time I did it with her, I said, so now do I choose one? She said, absolutely not. Now you make friends with all of them, but you are in the center.
Mm-hmm.
None of those voices are you.
Mm-hmm.
And I was speechless. I was like, whoa. So I really hear you. So the parts, what are the parts?
The parts are like the
child part of the defensive part. Those are the parts.
Yeah, and they're neural networks. They're old ways that your psyche developed a memory, emotion, belief, and behavior that became like a subpersonality, and it's just an access to part. It's just something we have access to that we allow to sometimes make decisions for us and run the show if we don't have a healthy inner self to hear the needs of those parts and find a way to meet those needs and for the good of the whole, you know.
And those things can be so subtle. I received a lovely present of a textbook called Women in America. And it's really well done, fourth edition. And I kind of opened it at random. I was reading about women in sports from in the latter part of the 20th century. And, of course, being born in 46, I was very impressionable years in the beginning of that. And they were talking about how women athletes were always depicted as lesbians. And that girls were kind of, without being directly told, were told that it was better to be weak than strong. Or maybe we were even more directly told that. But certainly not to be athletes. Now, we've done a lot to change that, and I'm so glad of it. But I have a particular teacher, and we do a physical thing together, and he's always saying, be an athlete. And I always see myself cringing when he says that, and now I understand why.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you have a memory, emotion, belief, and behavior from that time. Yeah.
From my most impressionable times as a girl about what it is to be a woman, that you are not athletic.
Yeah. Yep.
It's okay. It's okay for me to run a chainsaw and have a farmstead, but not to be an athlete. I mean, now that's just really ironic, isn't it? It also made me really understand why so many women can be really amazing sexual athletes, but not athletes anywhere else.
Yes. Oh,
because nobody ever asked that one out.
No.
If listeners want to get in touch with you or find out more about what you're doing, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, probably just my website, primaltrust.org. I also have a lot of free content on YouTube, which is Primal Trust Official, and on Instagram, which is primaltrust_official. On my website, I've got a bunch of free trainings. If anyone's dealing with Lyme disease, I've got a whole free Lyme webinar and training and ebooks and things like that. And then we have a membership where I basically take people through the process I went through, and we have live classes every single day that's part of it where you can self-regulate in a community and learn all the tools. And it's a whole community platform to help people with chronic illness and trauma patterns.
So if someone is really struggling and they're saying like, yeah, well, maybe it worked for her, but there's no way it would work for me.
Mm-hmm.
What you're saying is it will most likely work for you if you don't do it by yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And that's why we have a community, because it's hard when you're really ill to sometimes do this on your own, and to be able to show up every day and to be in a class where you're regulating with other people, you're learning new tools with other people, you're realizing that you're not that different, actually. And that's the thing. We've got people in there that have been sick for 30, 40 years even, and all ages, and it's so validating, and that often disarms the nervous system right there. Like, I am not
right
alone.
There. Right there.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I've laid in bed having this conversation. I am thirsty. I do not want to get up, but I'm thirsty. I'm not getting up. You know, when you're really every little thing becomes an effort. Every little thing becomes something you have to actively somehow do. So the community, we cannot stress enough the importance of the community. Here's a fun study that they did. They took some volunteers and they showed them a hill. And half of them were shown the hill. Just here you are, you have to climb this hill. How hard do you think it will be? They didn't even have to do it. They just said to say how hard it was. And the others were shown the hill, but they were in a group of people. And everybody who was in a group of people thought that it would take less time and be easier to climb the hill.
Mm-hmm.
Than the people who were by themselves. Yeah. It's that much part of us. It's that hardwired into us that it's going to look easier when there's other people doing it with you.
Yeah.
And it probably actually will be easier as well. And to me, people say, these devices, they separate us from each other. And I say, no. Now, what the Internet and these devices have done is to gather together groups of people, groups of women especially, working through the same issues at the same time and doing it in a way that makes it so much easier for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's true. There's so many blessings available because we can connect with each other all over the world.
Yeah. So you provide a opening to a community. It's not everybody's community. You don't want it to be everybody's community.
Right.
It wouldn't work if it was everybody's community.
That's true. I couldn't handle it.
Right. It's the community of the women who really will benefit from working together at that time. And that's usually pretty obvious. Once you start to, as you said, get into the relaxation response from the vagus nerve, which is also the fun nerve, it's hard to settle for less.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You become very reluctant to do things that really are stressful and aggravating.
Yeah. Yeah, you realize there can be a different way to live.
That you can choose fun.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not irresponsible.
Yeah.
Or out of community.
Yeah.
Or selfish. Or any of those things that we've been told.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep, and that's where you start to get a different perspective on life because your brain state changes when you're calm. You're like, oh, this wasn't as terrible and bad as I thought, and I'm, you know, there's opportunities around me to live that I didn't even see because I was so stressed before. All of a sudden, the colors are brighter. This, you hear the birds, you see smiles on people's faces, and life starts to light up again.
Beautiful. Thank you for that. Mm. How wonderful.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
So, what one thing could that person who is listening but still thinking, nah, it won't work for me? What one thing could we ask that woman?
Well, I can tell you that there's a science called the cell danger response, and that is talking about how at a cellular level we get stuck literally in a danger response, and it keeps nutrients from coming in and keeps toxins from coming out. And this is, there's a science behind this. This is, and we can shift ourselves out of that danger response no matter how old you are, no matter how sick you are, no matter what your diagnosis is. Literally, it is possible to shift that cell by targeting your autonomic nervous system. And, you know, if you're somebody who notices when you go outside and maybe you sit under a tree and put your back against a tree for 30 minutes and you notice, wow, I feel better. Well, imagine if you strung that together moment after moment, hour after hour, day after day. I feel a little better. I feel a little better. You're literally pulling yourself out of cell danger response just sitting in nature for 30 minutes. And when you string those moments together over time, your entire physiology shifts. It does. You're not, all of us are wired this way. We're wired to heal. Nature is wired to heal. And so I would say to that person, go test it out. Go sit at a tree and listen to the birds for 30 minutes. And if you feel better, then you know your biochemistry is now better than it was 30 minutes ago. And if you keep doing that and your biochemistry keeps shifting moment by moment, you will start to self-heal.
As soon as I got home from the hospital, I made them carry me outside.
See, you know.
Right up there under that cedar tree. You put me right out there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's really, it is the source of all healing, all energy, all nourishment.
Mm-hmm.
What a wonderful time it has been speaking with you tonight. Thank you so much for the work.
Thank you, too.
Doing the fun that you're having, the joy that you are spreading, the calmness that you are curating. I think that we are reweaving the healing cloak of the ancients.
Yeah.
And the threads that you are adding to this weaving are beautiful and vibrant indeed.
Oh.
What is one
you.
Last thing you would like to leave in the hearts and the minds of everyone who's been listening?
Yeah. We are being asked to reconnect with nature, not only for the healing of our body, but the healing of the planet. And a lot of times we end up in these health crises as a way, as a calling from nature of saying, you know, come back to yourself, come back to your heart, come back to me. And I believe that those of us who are dealing with chronic illness are learning the tools and the techniques that are going to help save, you know, so many people on the planet, because the thing is, when we start to self-regulate, we can't help but want to be in nature. It's where we're naturally called. And there's something beautiful that happens as we start to relax our nervous system. We start to feel the heartbeat of the earth. We start to see the beauty all around us. And so, you know, it's not just about healing our body. It's about healing the consciousness of the planet and healing just the energy. And when you're on your own self-healing journey for your illness, you're participating in a much bigger healing.
Beautiful. Thank you so very much. And Sarah Ellen, thank you for helping me to restore herbal medicine to its rightful place as people's medicine. I got those red clover contracts countersigned and out in the mail. Let's keep going. Green blessings, everybody. I'll be talking to you next week from sunny California. I'll be out on the West Coast to do a few things, but mostly to celebrate Monica Jean's 16th birthday. That's right. You can go to YouTube and see six-year-old Monica Jean making slippery elm balls, and now she's 16. Holy smokes. Blessings, everybody. Good night.
Good night.